40 and 30 rolls on, and in fact, rolls to a stop. We've arrived at stop number 40. We've done it. We've scaled the mountain. We have seen from all the way from Leo Jimenez all the way up to Kevin Gausman. We have now arrived at the 40th player on the list. We have arrived at the top of the mountain. We have arrived at Bo Bichette. We have arrived at a really, really fun day. And that is, of course, opening day. It's opening day. It's time for celebration. Hope springs new. And I'm hyped. I'm hyped to talk about Bo Bichette. Lots to dig into here. Lots to learn about. And what a guest to talk to about it. If you have been following, which I assume you have, the guest that I've been able to talk to and been so blessed to interact with over the course of this series, basically every single one of them, I've felt something, a personal connection to them at one point or the other, either through their work or personally crossing paths. And the guest today is no exception. I have said many times that working in Canadian sports media, the people who are real, true baseball people tend to find each other over the course of time. There are people that fake it. There are people that drop in June and they drop out in September. People who get paid to talk about the Leafs, but the Leafs aren't on, so they talk about the Blue Jays, and they also get clicks, and they also get views, and that's fine. Everyone's got to eat. But there are people that you can tell pretty quick, and you can tell in April, and you can tell in September, when they're real baseball people. And I've had the pleasure of being beside and across from and around our guest today for many years. And I said this to a couple other folks. Whenever I was around the stadium and I had my big press pass badge that said, "Do not let this man in the clubhouse," in bright red letters, I often felt like I didn't belong there, which is fine. The team didn't think I belonged there either. And they're good talent evaluators, so I got to hand it to them on that one. But there were a few people that always went out of their way to make it a little easier to me, to be a little kinder to me, to talk ball with me, to make me feel like part of the group. And the gentleman that joins me today is right at the top of the list of those people. Somebody that, since I've known him, has been one of the great people to pull up beside and watch batting practice with, to listen to the jams that play out during practice before the game. You know him from MLB.com, the flagship of the league. It is none other than Keegan Mathieson joining the show today. Keegan, thank you so much, man.
It's last call, baby. I love it. I love that I'm number 40 out of 40. This is great. And yeah. Zoom, you were saying that, I was remembering where we first met way back on the Sportsnet desk.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many folks do know this, but out of college, this was 2016 going into 17 before I joined MLB.com. I was briefly an intern on the web desk at Sportsnet. It was a 3-month internship. And 1 month into that, I got the MLB job. Were my final 2 months grinding? Not exactly. But I remember many of those nights were spent with you, and the days with, I vividly remember a bright red coffee maker that you would make cups of absolute mud in. Like, you would need a spoon to drink the coffee. It was, man, what a beautiful machine that was. I think it broke a lot of fire codes. It tended to get awfully hot, but the little red rocket.
I was going to say that that famously shorted out a row of computers more than once.
Makes sense.
Yes, that is true. I remember they'd have you like write off of Don Cherry, whatever Don Cherry said. Like, "Keegan, you're going to write off grapes?" And you'd be like, "Sure."
Yeah. I did some really valuable journalism back in those days.
Look who's laughing now. Hey. Absolutely. And listen, we got you saved for the end because you're a top line player. You're an A guy. You're an all star. And we're talking about Bo Bichette today. When I gave you the list of players to pick from, I nudged you towards the top of the list. But what is it about Bo Bichette that you decided is somebody you wanted to dive into for half an hour to 40 minutes?
I think Bichette is someone who I've come to appreciate so much more being around him. Mm-hmm. And I'm someone, I know my own strengths and I know my own weaknesses. I'm not someone who gets to know a guy very quickly. And Bichette is, you know, not someone that you maybe get very close to at all. He's someone who does keep to himself and is a very thoughtful player. But I'm just naturally not the person who 5 days after a guy signs is going to know everything about him and be buddy-buddy. It's always a bit of a slower burn, I guess, for me to build relationships because I prefer it to be natural and not fraudulent and transactional. But I think coming to, I won't say no, Bichette, but coming to understand and appreciate him over the years, I have so much respect for Bo Bichette. And that's something I would be hesitant to say, I guess, a little earlier in my career, even 3-4 years ago, because I didn't know if that mattered. I didn't know if I was on the right track. What should I look for? I'm so confident in saying how much I respect Bichette's game and what he does day to day. It's made me appreciate who he is as a player and a person so much, seeing the work that goes into it. And seeing work, Zoobs, that is not just a guy saying, I work hard every day because they've got nothing else interesting to say. That's what it is 99% of the time. I don't care. We all work hard. But Bichette, I think, is this shining example of what happens when it works and when it matters. I think you see the Marcus Semien in him, who I got to cover briefly and sometimes from a distance. But you see how he's grown, and I think we're seeing in real time over this last 12, 18 months, you're seeing him go from a young man on the team to a true leader and a guy whose voice carries so much weight at an age that's still very young, especially on a team with a lot of veteran guys. So I think it's just been a real incredible study in the development of a player and the development of a person that's gone just so well, frankly, across the board. He's such an impressive player. I think Bichette is honestly a guy that 20 years from now, I'm going to be looking back and telling stories about covering him. Like, I think he's going to have that type of career.
Yeah, I agree on all counts there. I was sort of, when I was researching this and thinking about the mix and match and thinking about you and Bichette, I know you're not the type to do this. I'm more of the type to cast aspersions. I see a little bit of Bichette in you, and I see a little bit of you in Bichette in that sort of, in the timeline.
The physical build. The athleticism. Yeah, and
the hair, yeah. The size.
I will note, I did have Bichette length hair through high school and early university, down to the shoulders with no beard at all. It was just about the opposite of what you're looking at right now. That was not a good era. I wish somebody had have stepped in. Didn't have many girlfriends through that era either. I don't know how that worked, if there was correlation, but he pulled
that off.
Use
it or lose it. Use it or lose it. Just sort of that. I was around the team in 2018 and 2019, and I remember you were. You remember you said you got the job. You got the MLB job going into the 2017 season, and those first few jobs on the beat on a pretty irrelevant team. You can feel sort of like, where's my place? What am I doing? A lot of the guys in this beat have been here 20, 30 years. And then, you know, we hit the 2020s and you both start to feel comfortable. And now I think in the mid 2020s, you're a leading voice. He's a leading voice. You feel comfortable in yourself. And you, as you said, understanding your strength. When I look at Bo Bichette's profile, and we'll get into it. You mentioned, you absolutely nailed something there. You see, he's a guy that you think in 20 years, you'll be talking about. What I am struck is, like, Bo Bichette to me is a guy that could play any era of baseball. This profile always works. We do, you know, there's some stuff, and we'll get into the splits and the numbers and the swing rates and the contact rates and all that advanced stuff. I think sometimes we as analysts and fans and people who aren't playing can overthink it a little bit. And it's just like, this dude can hit, full stop. And it's supernatural, the level at which he can hit and the things that he can do that other people can't do. And sometimes you explain away things because you want it to seem either more complicated or less complicated, or be justifiable or fungible or tangible. This dude just has the ability to hit all the time, every day, day in, day out. And as you said, putting in the work in to completely maximize those skills. I think it's really something to behold.
Absolutely. The natural ability that he has. I remember when he was coming up as a prospect, that was back in the Josh Donaldson era, kind of after that, back when viral hitting tips were kind of trendy. At that point, it was really in that era of launch angle, getting that leg kick. Bautista and Donaldson had just come through Toronto with, unique swings that generated so much power despite not being 6'5", 250, you know? And I remember probably my first interview with Bo when he was 17 or 18. I assumed that. I remember asking him, like, is this a Josh Donaldson thing? Did you watch the video? No, like, absolutely not. This is just what his body does. And that excites me, you know? There's so much about Bichette's game that is, like you said, it could fit in any era. It's a bit timeless. And I get excited by a player that is natural, that is intuitive, I think is very important. And who plays one position and does it well. I mean, I cover a billion guys who play six positions and do a few things decently and are trying to tinker with a swing, blah, blah, blah. And it starts to blur together for me. Bo Bichette seems to stand out as such an individual. I think that's the word I'm looking for. He is such an individual, singular player on this team. Whereas every year there are player types. There's the versatile infielder. There's the DH type. Or there's the flashy corner outfielder, blah, blah, blah. Bichette is very much a type of his own, which excites me maybe more year to year after I get more bogged down with these other types. And just the natural movement of his body, the athleticism, the adjustments that he can make, the way he can shoot the ball down the right field line. He almost has his own trademark hit, that little shot line drive down the right field line for a double. And when you add on top of it, you know, I try to make sure I don't get too far inside baseball sometimes. You add on top of it the fact that he's got the hair, he's cool, he's got style. Like, he's a marketable guy who, like, I try to be aware of the fact that 90% of people who read my stories are my mom. They are your uncle. They are my buddy who likes the Leafs and watches the odd Jays game. Bo Bichette's cool.
Yeah.
He's somebody that fans look at and say, hell yeah, I like that guy. I can pick him out from all the other hitters in a sport where you can't always really see the stars. There's something to that. He is so individually Bo Bichette, and he's just such a joy to watch taking at bat. I mean, with the amount of baseball I watch, I've got to admit it takes a lot to get me excited and really lock in. It doesn't mean that I don't love it, but just to really hone in. And I stop when Bo Bichette's taking an at bat. I make sure I'm not writing. I'm not surfing Twitter. I watch him. Like, I make sure I pause and watch it because it's so unique and it doesn't look like all the other guys.
And you know, it might be quick because there's a lot of data. He gets down to business. Let's go through some details. He's 26 years old. You mentioned the age. This is the time signed through 2025. We know quite well the whole plane is built to self-destruct after 2025 anyway. He is one of the part and parcels to that. $12 million this year, 17.5 next year with bonuses for a top five finish in MVP. And don't look now, he was 12th in 21, 11th in 22, and 16th in 23. He is at 4 years service time, which goes into that previous point. He will hit FA at the end of 2025. They got that done by signing a 3-year, $33.6 million deal to buy out all of the ARB years. A wonder of development. He was a second round pick in 2016, just in time for Keegan to get the MLB job, in AA by 18 and debuting in 2019. The money aside, the people keep the love to bang this drum about why aren't the Jays extending Vladdy and Bo, and where's the extension? It seems very clear to me, all signs, that Bo Bichette is waiting until 2025 to talk about what he's going to get paid in 2026. That seems pretty on the wall to me personally.
Yeah, and the closer you get, the likelier it is. I get it. Why don't they sign Vladdy and Bo? If they could announce that tomorrow, cool. People probably feel better. But I always tell people to put it in the context of their own jobs. So let's say in my job, MLB offers me a new contract next year, but I also have the option for 30 companies to offer me contracts. Yeah, maybe 15 or 20 are serious. That's pretty damn attractive. It's something that I can never understand intimately. I can understand from talking to players, but to actually intimately understand that when it is a decision that will not just set up your financial future, but your whole family pretty much forever, as long as you're not really dumb about it. That is such a massive opportunity. And the Blue Jays, in both of these cases, they're not just trying to prove themselves to Vladdy and Bo. They're not just trying to give them a good deal. It has to be better than good. It has to be enough to convince them, holy, if I go to free agency, the 16 teams who call my agent, none of them are going to match this. That's a pretty big risk to take. We've seen times in the past where, yeah, this stuff backfires when a player bets on themselves, and sometimes you lose. Sometimes it does go that way. But it's got to be a real good deal. And with these two guys, I mean, Vladdy, Zoobs, I think it's a little easier to look at that and say, you know, Vladdy's side is pointing at 2021. The Blue Jays are saying, what about everything else?
I'm loving these people. Just to cut you off, the people that want the Vladdy extension, I was like, would love to know how you would have felt if they had given him the fair market deal after 2021 and just sat through last year. That would have felt superb, I'm sure.
It changes a bit. Now, with Bo, I think you know who he is. That's part of the beauty of Bo Bichette. I think you know who he is, and that range of outcomes is pretty tight relative to the sport of baseball. Theoretically, that would make it maybe a bit easier, but you're still talking about something that's pretty unlikely, I think. And I just always come back to even removing baseball from it. Just at a human level, it's got to be really attractive to hit an open market at the peak of your job in a sport that's not exactly going to fall off a cliff in the next 2 years. Maybe teams have more money. Contracts only go up, it seems, for these big position players. Bichette's going to be hitting free agency at a premium age at shortstop. Come on. You know, it's so tempting to be out there in the open market and have teams get into a bidding war. That's how you turn $210 million into $270 million real quick. And, you know, for guys like us, Zoobs, I know $60 million ain't much, but for these poor bootstrapping young baseball players trying to scrape it together, it's a few bucks.
Absolutely true. I couldn't agree more with all of that. Let's take a look at 2023, speaking of sort of who he is and who he's been. 2023 was more of the same, 135 games played, did miss a little time beginning of August, and then maybe rush back. We'll dig into it. But 135 games, 306, 339, 475 slash, 20 long balls, 73 driven in. That is good. Mental math quickly for a 125 WRC plus or a 123 OPS plus. I see you nodding. Yep, that adds up. Defensively, -3 outs above average. We'll get into the different metrics and how they feel about him. But Fangraphs had him just under 4 wins, 3.8, and Baseball Reference a little more generous, 4.9 wins. When you look at the year as a whole, how did you feel about Bo Bichette's 2023?
I thought it was a very strong year. I think there's a lot more in there. The thing that I was wrong about, and this happens sometimes, I thought that Bichette was going to push like a 30-30 season.
Yeah.
I was shocked that he was not running more. I know that he is not a burner. He's not an elite value-based runner, but I think he's quick enough. And I think he's a guy who can, like kind of like Kevin Biggio, make some good decisions on the bases and maximize those opportunities. I really, really thought he was going to be, I mean, at least a 25-25 guy, take a run at that, because he had been close to that in recent years. But that didn't happen, which surprised me. I think maybe the highest compliment, Zoobs, I can give Bichette last year is that I don't remember talking about his defense at all. Mm-hmm. And that was always the goal. Not a gold glove, but just if I'm not talking about it, if I'm not getting asked about it on the radio, that's a win. That's fantastic. Because that's enough to let his bat shine. Like a 306 hitter, I think, is who he's going to be. A 339 on base guy is probably who he is. He's never going to be the 380, 390 guy. I do think there's a little more power in there. I really do than the 20 home runs. I know he can get a little line drivey at times, and it's not always soaring out. But he is, I mean, if it's ever going to happen, Zoobs, it's this. He's in ridiculous shape. He is in stupid shape this year. I know he's talked about adding Muay Thai and martial arts and swimming and a lot of these things, which makes sense given the way his body moves. It's all about torque and the core for him to generate power. So it makes sense. It's not just not just fluff, but he is in remarkable shape. And interesting to have him at number 3 in the lineup as well, behind Vladdy. We'll see how that goes. But I think there's a little bit more power in there. Now my expectations for the base running aren't as high, but that's who he is. He's a 300 hitter who's going to spray the ball all over, hit it hard, and maybe there's a bit more power in there. I still think there is.
Yeah, I think it seems like a guy that could choose to hit for power if he chose to. Yeah. I think the approach is very intentional. When we talk about, you talked a great bit off the beginning about sort of knowing who he is. When I think about his walks and his walk rate, and you mentioned the OBP, you know, being a 339 thing, and he is very low in terms of walk rate, below 5%, which is like bottom five in the whole league. But it's also like, are you going to go to him and be like, hey, man, could you hit less? Like, it's just like, it's just not how it works, right? He's making it work because it works. He hits the ball to the opposite field more than anybody in baseball, a lot more than anybody in baseball. 40% of the time is 5% more than anybody in the league. And of all those guys that are hitting the ball the other way, he is so far and away the best hitter. It is like crazy. The only guy that's even close to him, Paul Goldschmidt, I guess, is like a guy that hits it the other way, but it's like 8% less than Bo does. Like, Bo hits the other way more than anywhere else and more than anybody else. It's an interesting wrinkle. Let's talk about the circles. We got to go to the StatCast circles quickly. The reds are your sweet spot and expected. Your light red, average exit below, whiff rate, K rate, hard hit rate. Your blues, chase rate and walk rate, and right in the middle, barrel rate, base running, fielding, and speed. That feels so perfectly accurate to who he was last year. The mid, as you mentioned, base running, fielding, speed, it just wasn't anything in either direction to really be worth talking about. And the high stuff being he hit the ball hard, he didn't swing and miss, he didn't strike out, and he hit it in a way that made you expect that he would have good results. I think the circles line up pretty well with what you see is what you get there.
Yeah, that's his identity. It's why I even like those opposite field numbers. It's because it is kind of like Danny Jansen leaning into being a pull power hitter, which I love. Yes. I love that Bo Bichette is hitting with power to the opposite. He's not just slapping singles. And just like all of the hard work stuff, it's not just another athlete saying, I'm trying to hit the ball to all fields, blah, blah, whatever. I've heard that a billion times. Bichette is actually doing it with purpose and because it's part of his natural identity. Like, this is just how he's grown up doing it. And it's what makes him the best version of him. It's not just something he's trying to do because other guys are doing it. And the athleticism is going to be good enough. I think it'll be a bit better this year. Maybe you see that speed tick up just a touch, especially if he's healthy. And I think Bo has learned over the years kind of how to take care of his body. A lot of guys talk about like post-game care, like going back to the hotel, what they're doing and stuff like that. Probably living a little cleaner than me, you know? I think they've got some fancy tools and beverages and all that stuff. But I think that will always be there. But it's the identity of hitting it to all fields as a matter of succeeding and using your own power, I think, is exciting about Bo. And I do think there's still more power there, but like you said, if he wanted to choose to be a pole hitter, I think he could do that and hit 35 this year. I just think he might strike out a bunch. But that ability to cover the plate. And when I think of a Bichette at bat, Zoops, like I think of a fastball on the outside edge that you're watching it go in and you almost think, oh, okay, he's not going to swing. And then there's just that little whip of the wrists that he slashes it down the right field line. And those are my favorite Bichette hits, when he just slashes it between the first baseman and the line. We've seen so many of them. And as a pitcher, it must suck. Like, it must be so frustrating to pitch to Bo Bichette. Yes, there are better hitters in Major League Baseball. Not many. There's a few. But I think Bo Bichette might be one of the most annoying hitters to pitch to, because you can really make a good pitch, and it's a few feet out of your hand, and you're thinking, hell yeah, this guy's going to stare at it. And then it just gets slapped into the corner.
Yeah, no free pitches either. He's a guy, like, there's some guys you might think, oh, I can steal strike one here. This is crazy. I looked through his, like, count splits, because the guy, like, not this isn't relevant for every player. This dude, it jumped out at me. 890 OPS on the first pitch, 1300 OPS on 1-0, and 870 on 0-1, which is to say, he did a lot of damage on the first two pitches of the count. There is no get me over fastball. There is no stealing a strike. There is no maybe he won't care. He hit 10 of his 20 home runs in the first two pitches of the at-bat. I think that is a very good indicator of, like, he is not up there to mess around and waste time. If you are pitching to Bo Bichette, every single pitch you throw better be with purpose and intent, because he is looking to hit the pitch that comes out of your hand, full stop.
Yeah, why wait? Why wait? Like, he's a guy that can hit these pitches. And that's why I'm kind of interested in the Vladdy and him flipping 2-3. Mm-hmm. I know it's pretty inside baseball, and frankly, it probably won't matter much. But if the aggression changes whatsoever, especially if he has Vladdy on base ahead of him a bit more often, we'll see. We'll see about that, because sometimes with Springer leading off, Bichette was coming up with empty bases last year sometimes. But the aggression is just what makes it so exciting. He tries to kind of blitz the pitcher. And if you try to get ahead with the 0-0 fastball, it's going to get jumped on.
Yeah. Something I've been sort of geeking out on with individual hitters and pitchers as well is sort of that individual run value. It's a little nebulous, but what I thought stood out for Bichette is, like, it just doesn't matter. Fastball, plus six value, 552 slugging. Sinkers, plus four value, 6% whiff rate. Just didn't swing and miss at sinkers. Curveball, plus five, a 604 slugging. Changeups, plus four, 652 slugging. It does not matter. There is no type of pitch that he is especially bad on. Slider a little bit because he likes to chase, but it's just everything. It's just there's that incredible plate coverage, that incredible aggression. There's no freebies. I think it's really indicative of the plan that he has. He swings a lot, fifth most in baseball in swing percentage, behind guys like Luis Robert and Sal Perez, ahead of Castellanos, Seager, Baez, and Albies. So that's the class that he's in swing wise, but I would say he's a better hitter than basically all those guys. Maybe Seager is a debatable one, but that's the class that he's in. He's in the class with Seager. Last year we talked about him out of a cannon. There was that in 2022, he sort of he struggled to find himself in the first half and then came on really strong when they really needed him. It seemed like in 2023 he had a real mandate for himself to not start slow. He came out, he was great in April, he was great in May, he was good in June, he was great in July, and then tweaked his knee the very end of July, stopping in between first and second, and tapered off a little bit in the back half. Do you think that was like a conscious thing for him to like make absolutely damn sure that he was ready to go at the beginning of last year?
I think so. Like, Bo has talked a lot about focusing on that, and this another thing that I respect so much about Bo is that he sees the big picture and all these things. Like, he's spoken about and said so many times that when he says consistency, he doesn't just mean at bats. Like, he means what he's doing at 11 a.m. on a game day, what he's doing at 9 p.m. after an afternoon game. Like, what are you eating? What are you doing? How are you treating your body? And again, a lot of that coming from Marcus Semien and learning under guys like that. But I think it's something I appreciate more and more. I mean, like, at the end of the year, I want to have surgery on every part of my body. And all I'm doing is sitting in an air-conditioned press box drinking coffee. Like, it, just the absolute bare-bones basics of traveling around, having an extremely inconsistent sleep schedule is tough. Now, put on top of that, playing a sport at the highest level possible for 162 games. It is, mentally as much as physically, it's so incredibly grueling for these players. And I don't think I appreciated that properly when I started this job years back. I think I'm closer to appreciating it now, I guess, because you see how rare it is for these guys and you see how injuries can pile up. Mm. Because if you tweak your ankle, you don't have two nights off before your next road game against the Utah Jazz or something, right? Like, you've got to be ready sometimes 12 hours later. And for Bichette to be able to be a guy who I think can be a 162-game guy most years, as long as there's not a major injury, he doesn't need regular off days. I think he's really started to focus on that more, kind of getting to that like Bautista-level, real obsessive focus on it, because he knows that's part of his calling card. He's the guy who's always going to be there, and teams care about that also when it's money time. you know, when it's free agency time. If you're a guy who's playing 102, then 70, then 140, then 90, okay, that's going to be a factor. But if you are signing Bo Bichette, you are purchasing a full player, and you're going to get him every day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love what you talked about inconsistency there in finding a rhythm and normalizing as best you can that incredible grind. Something I think that we see that payoff in is the fielding. I know it wasn't a headline thing last year. Graded out. I feel the analytics. I am very wishy-washy on. He graded out as mostly fine, like a minus three by outs above abouts above average, which is like fairly subjective. 28 of 35 qualified shortstops, but not hugely detrimental. He graded out fine coming in, a little below average side to side. The arm sits around 20th, which is a below league average, but it puts him in class with JP Crawford, Trey Turner, Seager, Bogarts, Lindor, Swanson, good defensive shortstops. The arm does not have to be the entire package. Fangraphs liked him a lot more than StatCast did. They had a 4.1 UZR, a positive defender, mainly because he cut his errors down from 23 to 8. I would say the compliment that you paid earlier is the same that I would pay here, is that the best thing about Bo's defense last year is I didn't really notice it. There wasn't the why on earth did he throw that. There wasn't the who does he think he is throwing on it. Like he just seemed very consistent, quiet, and just made the plays that you needed him to make. I thought it was a consistency is sort of the perfect word for what I enjoyed about Bo Bichette's shortstop defense last year.
And the reason he got better is because I cannot beat Bo Bichette to the ballpark. It's impossible. And again, this is, I'm coming around on what you said earlier, Zubes. This is why I kind of maybe connected to doing a Bichette one, because it's slowly as I've gotten into this job, I think watching Bichette go through his day makes me understand the game better. And I think this is something I've appreciated more over the years. There were lots of times where I would see guys taking a billion ground balls and I'd be thinking, okay, how much of this is eyewash? How much of it's helping you? Like, what are we doing here? Every day I get to the ballpark, I don't care if we're in Toronto or Cincinnati or some crappy city, Bo Bichette's on the field taking ground balls and he's taking 1,000 of them. And while BP is going on, there's somebody hitting him grounders. And it's more importantly, it's very focused, detailed work. It's not just somebody filling time. Like there's clearly a level of intention going on with all of it, but I can't beat the guy to the ballpark. He's always there. And again, it's work that actually matters, not just a guy that's trying to make it look like he's working hard, which I mean, pro sports, pro everything is full of that stuff, but the time he's put in is paying off. And this was the goal, just good enough. He was always going to be an offense first player. And I think that what he's done defensively exceeds the likely expectation from a few years ago. Because a few years ago, it was more, okay, maybe he can stick for a bit, but then maybe the Blue Jays find a shortstop. And, you know, that was always the conversation around a guy like Lindor or something like that. Okay, This is the opportunity to get Bo over to second. And you could see some sense in that. Clean up the defense, be a power-hitting second baseman, sure. But I think he's a shortstop. Like, I think he's a legitimate shortstop. And as long as the defense stays here, that's good enough. Like, he's going to hit enough to be a very valuable player. And maybe the super highlight reel plays won't always be there. But as long as you're not booting the regular ones, that's the key. That used to be Bo's issue. It was when his feet would be planted, when it would come right at him. He was so great naturally chasing the ball, but it would just be those basic fundamental ones. And I think he's cleaned up the fundamentals, and credit to him, because that's not sexy. It's not exciting. I've watched 1,000 hours of him taking ground balls. It's really boring. It's incredibly boring, but it matters and it appears to have worked.
Yeah. We could talk base running and speed really quickly. They're not great. He grades out to be about even run value. He's a good aggressive base runner. His value last year was negated by a couple bad hold advance decisions. On one of them was the one where he tweaked his knee, so I don't really hold that against him. The other one, the big one, was the stutter step on Canada Day against Boston at the plate. You can place that blame wherever you like. But in general, he generally makes the stretch for second call correctly. Like more often than not, he does it absolutely right. There are a couple, because I'm a dad, I had to take this on. There's a couple painful outs at third when he's on second, but so it goes. In general, a good, smart, aggressive base runner. Not, you know, the sprint speed doesn't jump off the page, but he's a good athlete. And generally when he chooses to be aggressive, wild card game notwithstanding, it's generally the right call. And again, a great play in the wild card game. I think that line up sort of with your assessment of him on the base paths.
Yeah, and it brings me back to after that that big out at home. I remember Bo came out to do a scrum with the media, which I respected. And I think my first question was, you know, why'd you go? And he looked at me and said, because I thought I'd be safe. Yeah. And I thought, you know what? That's fine. That's perfect answer. Thank you. No further questions. I think exactly. It's kind of like the defense. As long as you can clean it up and not have any unforced errors, that's really just the goal here. A year ago, I did think there'd be more base stealing. Maybe a bit of that comes back. We'll see. I'd like a bit of that to come back. But as long as there are no game-altering, unforced errors, and if there is, at least have a reason for it that's as good as that when an idiot like me asks you why you did something.
I think unforced errors is the perfect way to put it. Like my takeaway from doing this deep dive was like he really cleaned up the unforced stuff last year. It was like there was not really many standout base running things throughout the course of the year. There wasn't a lot of bad defense. It just sort of like it seemed very clear to me that he is aware that if he can just be a neutral in those places, the bat will carry him to being a star player. So that's under the hood. Let's take a look forward into the projections. Everything looks pretty much the same. Most of these systems have him as a 280 to 290, mid 290s guy, 330s in the OBP, and 440 to 470 for the power, ranging from 20 home runs to 25 home runs. WRC pluses in the high teens to 123, win values between 3.5 and 4.5. Basically saying, and this is believe it or not, he's going to be somewhere between the guys he was the last 2 years. I think that makes perfect sense to not expect a big change in the profile, maybe a little more power.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I'm looking at the zips and the steamer here that are projecting him just below 300 in that 25 homer range. I think that makes sense. I think he's a 300 hitter. With Bichette, there's always going to be BABIP fluctuations on that just naturally. So that could change up or down 10, 15 points. It always will. But I do think Bichette's a guy that can win a batting title too. Totally. I know that that's not a hot take. It's a lot of people have said it for a long time, but based on talent, and then there always is some level of luck involved with balls in play. And one of these years, it's going to pop for him. It's not going to be a 302 or a 309. It's going to be a 329 type of deal. But I think he can flirt with that 300 again. And if there's anything that's going to pop, I think it'll be the power. I think the average isn't going to jump to 390. The on-base isn't going to jump to 400. But if there's anything that really jumps, I think there could be a bit more of a power season in there. And I'll be interested to see long-term. It's going to take a long time to see this, but long-term, if that 2-3 switch with Vladdy puts him in more counts where he can take that risk when he's got a runner on, trying to hit for a bit more power. I almost said hit for more damage, and I would have hated myself. I hate when front office baseball speak starts to enter my vocabulary. I don't know why we started calling it damage, like power.
I think I dropped one in there. I apologize. Discourse-wise.
Yeah, really focus on the process, you know?
Yes.
Routines is the word of this spring, and it has driven me insane because it means nothing, but you can say it in the place of everything.
I remember when they signed Socrates Brito. It was the handedness was intriguing.
Oh, love it. The further we get from reality, the better. It's just great.
And we all remember the run prevention wave of 2022. Awesome. Oh, suddenly, yes. Run prevention was the word. You just call it defense and pitching. That's fine. We're smart enough to get it. Discourse wise, I think he has. There's this weird thing in this city, and I don't know if every city is like that, but in Toronto, there's this weird thing where people seem to feel like they have to pick between Vlad and Bo.
Yeah.
Where just like it has to be one or the other. You can't just have two stars. And it seems like right now, Bo is the guy that people are like, if we had to sign one, if we could only sign one, Bo is the one we want to put our chips on. Bo's the star. It does seem like, you know, his performances, the consistency, the fact that he has year in, year out, sort of been the same guy, been 290, 300, been, you know, 20 plus home runs, been improving as a shortstop versus maybe regressing a little bit defensively, tightening up the mistakes and becoming the best version of himself. It does seem like he is, I mean, he's the last guy on my list. He does seem like he has taken over the spot as, like, I don't want to say face of the franchise, but as what people consider the best player on the team right now.
Yeah, I think he's the face of the franchise. I really do. I believe when we're talking about like a discourse and a narrative, I think he also benefits from how this has happened alongside Vladdy, because Vladdy was supposed to be the savior and supposed to do it kind of all by himself. Well, Bichette was like the 9 or 10 ranked prospect in baseball too, but when you're in the shadow of Vladdy, it's going to take some of that spotlight off of you. Vladdy peaked with that 2021 and has trended down since then, whereas Bo is trending upward at a very slight angle, which is kind of his whole thing. And I guess hasn't disappointed people yet. And again, that's kind of Bichette's whole thing. I don't think he's going to disappoint people. But I think when you look at it from a hardcore inside baseball standpoint, there's an argument to be made. When you look at it from a casual fan standpoint, my mom is obsessed with Bo Bichette. She watches a couple games a week, knows the game a little bit, loves to listen to Buck, and she loves Bo Bichette. So many of my buddies love Bo Bichette. Look down from the press box. You're going to see a ton of Bo Bichette jerseys. He's a marketable, magnetic guy in this sport. So I think he is winning that. I think if they were running for office here, he's winning it. There is a bit of that weird boy band dynamic where it's, you know, Team Bo, Team Vladdy. Everybody can win here, but it's been a Bo town, I believe, for a couple of years. Vladdy can change that real quick, real quick. But I think people are kind of like what we've talked about a lot. They're appreciating the steady growth, and they are seeing him be more than just a young guy. They're seeing his development as a person and a leader, which is something that's hard for fans to reach out and touch a lot of the time, I think, because leadership is a intentionally murky word that is so often used incorrectly. It's either just thrown at the oldest guy on the roster, or it's misrepresented as a guy screaming and rah-rah, whatever. Like, I think people are able to meet Bichette where he is and see how that leadership works and see him kind of grow into that, which maybe forges that connection a little bit more over the last year.
Yeah, I love some of the points there. He has been the guy this offseason that's been in the media sort of saying, I don't want to say saying the right things, but sort of pointing out, like, we're not a young team anymore. And this is the first year where people aren't like, hey, look out for those young Blue Jays. It's like, hey, they're being doubted. They're being cast away. They're being, hey, this Jays team is going to panic this offseason. Hey, they need to make a big move. Hey, they failed in Ohtani and they had a terrible offseason. He is the guy that has gone in, and it's not that he does the radio all the time, but when he does go on the radio, there's always two or three things that come out that you're exactly. Like, the Justin Turner all of a sudden is on the team. This is how they view themselves. I think that is really important. And you made a great point earlier in this podcast, in that I have sort of, ever since you said it, it's been in my head. He does sort of, you mentioned him as a cool, and it's so perfectly put, because, you know, to define cool and to become cool and the essence of cool, you can't want it and you can't try it. You can't try to have it. You have to be comfortable being yourself and being fully you. And I think back to the Gente de Barrio, the party atmosphere, and often you would sort of see and you'd be like, is Bo fitting in down there, right? As a fan, they cut to the dugout and he's just like sitting there staring, and you realize over time, not that one approach is wrong and one is right, it's just like Bo didn't change. He was always comfortable being himself. It was about hard work. He was friends with those guys, but he maintained who he was and was himself the whole way. And now I think we're reaching a point where that's being appreciated, and that is being, I don't want to say built around, but that is sort of the face of the team right now.
Completely agree. It's that the home run jacket and all of that is such a good example. I know that's an extremely loaded topic for some reason. I think we've all lost our collective minds. I don't care if you come and put a Speedo on in the dugout, whatever brings you joy, do it. Who cares? But Bichette not participating in some of that stuff, that's not him saying, I hate this. That's not him saying these guys are foolish. He's just someone who is very much his own self. And you see that. This is another thing I've only kind of allowed myself to have an opinion on in more recent years, but just the way that guys move through the clubhouse, the way they walk out onto the field. When I look at Bo Bichette, I stood in the dugout of Tropicana Field today and just watched him walk up the steps onto the field, look around. He was moving just 1% slower than everybody else. And if you dropped someone in who'd never watched a baseball game into that dugout next to me, they would know he's the guy. There's something about him as he moves, that confidence, that he is just so fully and truly, he is Bo Bichette. That's the whole thing with him.
Beautifully put. We've arrived at force of comp, my favorite part of the entire exercise. You can take this however you'd like. When you think about Bo Bichette, who or what does he remind you of?
I thought about this today, and I'm going to go off baseball. Is that okay?
I love when they're off baseball. Somebody said a grocery store once. Jose Barrios was a grocery store.
Bo Bichette is Tony Soprano.
Oh, man.
Bo Bichette is the guy. He knows what it means to be number one. But when I look at Bichette, I see sometimes some chaos and some mess around him. And I see someone who sometimes quietly, sometimes a bit more loudly, is able to see the big picture of things and what's going to happen next. If this happens, then that's going to happen next. He sees what it's going to mean to people around him. And you also see how other people orbit around Bo Bichette. He's not the loudest guy in the locker room whatsoever, not close. But if there's a loud clubhouse and Bo Bichette clears his throat, everybody else shuts up. They're listening to him immediately. He has that quiet level of power that is earned, and that is so incredibly rare. It's rarer and rarer with each passing year, I think, because with each passing year, fewer people shut up. But, you know, we're becoming a louder people. But Bichette is someone who, just by walking into a room, just by clearing his throat or saying yes or saying no or raising his hand, the room freezes. There's a reason, like you said, Zoobs, I was just thinking about this. When he comes on the radio or when he does a scrum with us, I made the mistake earlier in my career, and Bo was probably subtler with it, of thinking that some of his answers were boring. It would be, hey, Bo, you made the All-Star game. How's it feel? It feels good, I guess, you know. And in hindsight, sometimes bad questions lead to bad answers. you know, shocking, I know. But over the years, I've learned that there's always something in there, and it's very intentional. I think the last year when he came back from that knee injury, we were in Cincinnati, and he started to use the word urgency. Mm-hmm. That word's been used 1,000 times since then. It was Bo who started that. And mm-hmm. I remember standing in that dugout, just baking in the sun, as Bo said, and not in a growly voice, not rah-rah. It was so soft that if you weren't really locked in, I wouldn't have caught it. But it was just, yeah, I think we need to play with more urgency. And coming from Bo, that matters. He's a guy who can snap his fingers and make something happen. He's a guy who can make people do stuff for him and isn't afraid to get dirty himself. I think Bo Bichette is Tony Soprano.
That's so good. That is so good. Wow. Yeah. I'm almost embarrassed. Mine's not nearly that good. Well, you mentioned his name multiple times throughout this. He reminds me, the path reminds me of Marcus Semien.
Yep,
a little absolutely. Bit I think you sort of like people forget because Marcus Semien is a great defensive player now. He had 35 errors when he was 25, when he was 24. He had 21 when he was 25, and then he cleaned it up. He hit his prime and he was like, okay, I need to be a good enough shortstop that I can be playing enough to get my bat into the lineup, because he was so much of a liability for those Oakland teams that they didn't play him as much. And then he sort of figured it out. He settled down. He settled into himself. And now he is the guy that when you are fucking serious about winning, you better have a guy like this, or it's not going to happen for you. It's just that simple to me. I think it made me very happy to hear how much you sort of talked about that Marcus Semien and Bo Bichette, that symbiosis, and how much that relationship may have helped him. I think there's a lot of the Marcus Semien path in Bo Bichette, because people were really quick. I know it did eventually happen, but they were very quick to want to move Marcus Semien off of shortstop. And he put in the work to be a shortstop well into his 30s.
Absolutely. And Semien's another guy who, try to even think of what Marcus Semien's voice sounds like. It doesn't exactly pop to mind immediately. He's not always in front of the camera, but holy crap, when he talks, people care. He's the guy who can command a room immediately. It's that quiet, unspoken power as one of the most respected players in baseball. I think Bo is on that path, too. It's hard to be there when you're at this age, but give Bo another 4 or 5 years on this path, working the way he does, as more players are exposed to him, either as teammates or opponents. I think Bo is going to be one of the most respected players by other players in the entire sport because of that. And the word you used, Zoobs, that I loved was serious. Bo Bichette's a serious baseball player. There's lots of baseball players who are not serious players. Bo Bichette's a very serious baseball player. And that's why I think he fits on a championship team. Like, I think he's part of that happening. You need more than one guy for that to happen. Not everyone's a serious baseball player. Not close. Bo Bichette is very much a serious baseball player.
2024 outlook, I think we've sort of touched on it quite a bit. I expect him to be the player that he has been the last 3 years. I expect the numbers to be same. I think 25 home runs is exactly who I think he's going to be. I expect the defense to be even more clean. I think the work will be there. I expect a big year. I wouldn't be surprised. I'll say this much. We talked about right off the top, he has that contract bonus for a top five MVP finish. I wouldn't be surprised if he's making more than 17.5 next year. That's what I would say about that.
Yeah, I like that. I think he's got to get in the top 10 this year. Like, as long as health doesn't get in the way, that's the asterisk for everybody. But if Bo can play 155 games, like, those counting stats for him are always going to stack up. Mm-hmm. Now, will the base running and defense, will that hold down the broader wins above stats and stuff like that? Because, you know, when voting is done on these, you have a voter pool from people across the league. They're looking at stats pages. They're looking at the metrics, the data. They're not as up close and personal as I am with Bo, just like I'm not as up close with Marcus Semien as a Rangers reporter is. But as long as those don't get in the way of dragging down his broader value stats, I think there's absolutely a top 10 finish in there. I think, like I've said, I think the power maybe ticks up just a touch. But otherwise, I think you're talking about one of the most predictable players, like definitely the most predictable Blue Jay, which is a compliment in a very unpredictable sport. I think he's pretty, I almost said he's easy to bet on. Maybe that shouldn't be what I say. But he's, let's just stick with the word predictable. I was probably in a better place with that.
And big picture, I mean, reading between the lines and even on the lines of what we said tonight, I mean, I think he's got another 10 years in the league. I think he's got prestige written all over him. I think, you know, he is going to at least explore free agency, and he is going to go and be somebody that is in the league for a long time on good teams and be a good player and be a real problem no matter where he is, no matter who he's with. I think he's somebody that understands what it takes to be great, and not only willing to do the work, but like excited about doing the work, into doing the work, understands that doing the work is the job. The games is almost gravy. The 1,000 ground balls, that's what the job is. That's what you're actually being paid for. The lights coming on and the crowd being there, that is the payoff. The much like the actor, all the preparing, or musicians, the jamming, the recording, that is the end. The actual job of being a baseball player is all the other stuff. I think he understands that and is primed for a long, productive, very good career.
He just gets it. He gets it. You know, Bichette's the example I'll use. I mean, if I don't have a better idea for a job over the next 10 years, when the next wave of top prospects come, I compare them to Bichette. He's going to be that guy. And you look at his career now, Zoobs, like I'm looking at his page, 653 hits, 130 doubles, 89 home runs, like going into his age 26 season. He could be at 1,000 hits going into his age 28 season with, you know, 120, 130, 140 home runs. You start to put that down the line at a realistic run at 2,000. And I know the 3,000 hit era is not going to come around all that often, but you're talking about a guy who could conceivably take a run at some of those large counting number milestones that we're not seeing a ton of anymore. Health is always going to be the one big thing, but as long as he stays healthy and is in games, I trust him to rack those up. I trust him to have a hell of a career. And I think that if he's put in situations to be in an ALCS, a World Series, like he's going to be a guy that has a moment. I think he's going to be a guy that absolutely has a moment. You can't really get a team there single-handedly. Everybody's got to get there. But just like Bautista made so much sense, you knew he was going to have a moment. Obviously, he was going to have a moment. Bichette doesn't have that quite that same FU. It's a little more internalized than some of the past greats in Toronto, but he's just so built for that. All those counting stat milestones are laid out in front of him pretty clearly. Where does it happen? How much longer am I covering it? I don't know. 2 years and then we'll see. But it's looking like a hell of a career.
Yeah, I love it. I love those guys. He's one of the guys that I love when somebody comes along and sort of forces us to reevaluate the beliefs that we've held in things that aren't important. The reintroduction of the hit as like not an important stat, but like as a stat that you look at. I think we got a little away from that, where it's like batting average means nothing. It's like, I get it. It's not predictive. It's not particularly sticky. Getting hits is fucking really hard. And this dude makes it look like falling out of bed because of the skill and the work that he has put into it. Keegan, thank you so much for the time, man. We ran very long, but that's because you and I think we could do this all day. But I know that you're a very busy man. You are in Tampa, Florida, ready for opening day. We look forward to the work. Love the way you go about the business, man. I always meant to tell you, and I have you isolated now. Hey. I love the way you go about it. I was the opposite of this, right? People, you said there are people that they go to the ballpark and they look like they're working hard. I never did that. Luckily, I can't believe I'm on the field. That was like every single time I was there. No aspersions, but it's been palpable to be somebody that's known you the entire time and to watch the respect you have for the job, the respect you have for the work, the respect you have for. It's not fun all the time also, by the way, right?
Secret.
But not everybody says the quiet part loud. And not only that, but you know, when I was involved and I was there, you know, I'm a fan. It's very clear. I'm a fan. It's very difficult for me to turn that off. And I think it's a detriment to me if I try to turn it off. I can do some number analysis, but ultimately I want the team to win because I like the Blue Jays. Over the years, I think I have sort of realized that taking that different approach, there is actually quite a bit of not only value in that, but importance in it, right? Yeah. When we have important things happen in the midst of the silly stuff, you want to have people there that understand. I'll use Alek Manoah as an example. I really respected how you handled Alek Manoah last year because that got out of hand. I was talking to people and people were telling me things and I was like, I shouldn't know that. And it's like, I'm also keenly aware. It's like one side is telling one person who is telling me, one side is not saying anything. I can't be out here spouting, but I think the patience and care that you hold for the role is not going unnoticed by the fan base and is the reason you've had the success that you've had in your career. And that's why you're in fucking Tampa, Florida right now.
I love it. What a strange punishment for all of those kind of things. I appreciate it, Zoobs. Coming from you, that does mean a lot to me, buddy. I appreciate it so much. It's respecting the job is key. Not everybody does, and it pisses me off. So it's, you know, not that I would ever complain about anyone else in the media. And cut.
That is as good a place as any to leave off Keegan Mathis. And you know where to find the work. Keegan Mathis is on, you know, he says the crucible of being on Twitter, but you can find his work as well on MLB.com. Video work, written work. It's all very good. Keegan, thank you so much for the time, man.
Anytime, Zoobs. Thank you.
And folks, if you can believe it, that does it for 40 and 30. Well, maybe not totally. I have one more recorded for you. Dan Vogelback is making the 40 man at some point in the next 12 hours. So I recorded one. I recorded a 41 in 30. You're going to get an extra podcast, but wanted to take a minute here at the very end of the process and just express my gratitude for those of you who have reached out and said kind things about the series, for those of you who signed up in the middle of this series so that you could get more access, that you could get more podcasts. I see you. I see your names. I appreciate you. From the bottom of my heart, it means a lot that you would care enough about the content to sign up and give us some of your hard-earned money, and even more, give us some of your hard-earned attention. It's so cool. You know, I've been doing this a long time. I've been doing this for a larger percentage of my life than I ever thought I would. And, you know, I've said before that there were times that I thought this, maybe there was nothing for me here. And I've listened to a lot of audiobooks this year, and you know, when you're a father and your life becomes a little more in wider view, you get a bigger scope of who you are and what you're doing and why you're doing it. You know, I've learned along the way, and this year was the big focus for me, was the only person I should be comparing myself to and comparing my work to is myself from a year ago. And am I doing it for the right reasons, and am I improving? And I got to say that this has been the most fun, the most rewarding, the most addicting work that I've ever done in my life in any format, anywhere, at any time. I am just loving the time that I'm taking to do the deep dives, interviewing these friends and these peers and these people that I have gotten to know over the years, and getting the chance to sit down with them again and talk ball for an hour or half an hour, and dive into these players and learn a little bit more. And the more I learn, the more I want to learn, and the more stuff I get into, the more stuff I want to get into. And it's just been really refreshing and re-energizing for me to get to do this. And I wouldn't get to do it if it weren't for you, as listeners. So just one more time, a big time thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. This has been 40 and 30 for 2024. Nothing left to do but play baseball. How good does that feel? Opening day, Jays versus Rays, is just a few hours away. Right here on the Patreon, we'll be adding episodes all the time. Now that I am addicted to coming down here in my basement and recording in the evenings, hopefully we catch on with some more post-game stuff, with some more conversation, with some more deep dives, with some more guests, with some more discussion. There will be more right here. I want to make sure those of you that signed up that you are getting your money's worth and getting your content's worth, because, again, just from the bottom of the heart, absolute appreciation for you coming along for the ride and picking us and picking this series as something to listen to. So, for the last time before the beginning of the 2024 season, thank you so much for being a part of Less Than Jays.